Ever felt like you're waiting for someone who doesn't show? Or at least when they do show, it's too late? Sometimes I think this bench describes my relationship with God. There's an empty space next to me, and I wait, and wait, and wait. It's like the woman named Martha. She and her sister Mary and their brother Lazarus were like family to Jesus. So when Lazarus became ill, the two sisters sent for Jesus to come. They waited and waited till it was too late. Of course, that's when Jesus arrived. Martha greeted him and said, "Lord, if you would have gotten here sooner, my brother would still be sitting next to me right now. But I want to believe that you can still do something to change things." To Jesus' credit, he didn't make any excuses for not getting there sooner. He simply said, "Your brother will rise again." Now, Martha believed in the resurrection, so she said, "I know he will rise again one day. I just wish he was still with me here today." Then Jesus said, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die." And then he turns and asks Martha, "Do you believe this?" Martha said, "Yes, I believe you are the Christ." She goes to tell her sister that Jesus arrived, and Jesus goes on to do something truly incredible. You'll hear about that in a minute. But for now, I stop the story here, because this is where I need to remember some good things in life require waiting. I need to remember waiting is important. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Good morning, church. Good morning. I want to begin this morning by asking you to consider this question. When was the first time you felt let down by God? Think about it. Now, notice what I didn't ask. I didn't ask if you'd been let down by God. Because I think if you've been on this journey of faith for any length of time at all, it's inevitable that at some point, you have felt like God has let you down. What's amazing in the midst of this story today is that we're entering in to an encounter with two women who feel like God in some way has let them down. And yet what we discover is that sometimes in those moments where we feel like God has disappointed us, maybe even left us, that those become moments where if we look back, we can see how our doubts and questions become the catalyst to help us actually grow. It's a little bit like a young person in a village who finds themselves continually making mistake after mistake after mistake. And in frustration, they're like, "How can I quit tripping over myself like this?" And so they go to see the elder in the village. And their question is simple: "What would help me to make fewer mistakes?" And the elder, who's wise, looks and with a slight smile says, "Oh, that's easy. Experience. Experience would help you make fewer mistakes." Now, at this point, the young person feels emboldened and they say, "Great, experience. How do I get some of that experience?" To which the elder replies, "You make mistakes." This is how it is in life, isn't it? I think it's even how it is sometimes in our faith. What do you do when you find yourself in a moment where you wish you had deeper faith? Well, you go through a time where you feel like you've been let down by God. And what happens when you're in a moment where you feel like you've been let down by God? Well, you hopefully have an experience that leads to something that looks like deeper faith. This is a story, right? It's an encounter about women who have felt let down. And yet, as they take their feelings to God, they begin to discover exactly what it is that God's power in their midst can actually do. So let me set the scene for our story. It begins in Judea. Jesus has just been to Jerusalem to a festival at the temple, and he's asked by some religious leaders there some questions. They don't like his answers very much, and so they proceed to threaten first to stone him and then to arrest him. This isn't going well, and so Jesus and the disciples make a quick beeline out of town to avoid what might be a certainly difficult situation. And it's there, while they're removed from the city, that word comes to them that a good friend of Jesus, Lazarus, is gravely ill. Now, this word is sent to him by Lazarus' sisters, Mary and Martha, who are also close friends of Jesus. And you see, as their brother is getting ill, their worry, their doubts, and their fears begin to take over. And when Jesus hears the news of Lazarus' illness, his response is simple. He says, "This illness does not lead to death. Rather, it is for God's glory." He doesn't seem concerned, so little so that he actually stays two additional days. And then he turns to his disciples and decides, you know what, now it's time to go. And his disciples, as you would imagine, are pretty skeptical at this point. Why would we go back to the place where people are trying to kill you? I mean, why would we risk that, right? Well, perhaps to comfort the grieving, because by this time, Jesus knows that his friend Lazarus has died. Now, Martha gets the word first that Jesus is approaching, and so she comes out to him and says, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And just a few minutes later, her sister Mary tries the same line, "Lord, if you had but been here." Both of these women love Jesus. They actually believe that Jesus can do something powerful in this moment. And yet, here they are, in the midst of their grief, feeling like they have been let down by the very one whom they love. Now, this is an encounter story, right? One that could feel like a chance encounter that can become a change encounter. And what may change for you as we unpack this text is how we begin to understand Jesus' identity. What's going on below the surface? So we come to this story with our doubts and with our disappointments. And my hope is that when we leave, we might find that we're carrying something more, a fuller sense of who Jesus is, one who is both fully divine on the one hand and fully human on the other. But what does it mean to encounter a God who is both of these things? How are the two even held together? Well, to explore that, let's look at Jesus' response to these two women who come to Jesus. Right, they both offer the same statement. "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And yet what Jesus says to each of them in response couldn't be any more different. I kind of picture the first scene like this. When Martha comes out to Jesus, I sort of imagine her standing there with her hand on her hip, her finger wagging, going, "Lord, if you had but been here, my brother would not have died." Her words carry with them this sense of, "Look, man, you came too late. I am disappointed. You missed it," right? And Jesus' response back to this finger in his face seems pretty direct to me. He says, "I am the resurrection and the life." As Timothy Keller puts it, he says, it's almost like Jesus' response is, "Well, with me, it's never too late, no matter what you think." Those who heard Jesus' words to Martha would have immediately thought back to an earlier time when Moses was on Mount Sinai and he was asking God, "I have to go back to the people. Who is it, should I say, has sent me?" And God's response to Moses is, "Tell the people, I am has sent you." When Jesus uses the "I am the resurrection and the life," the people would have gone, "Oh, he's identifying himself with that same God. Jesus is connected to God." It's a statement that we get to hear this day as one of Jesus' divinity. This is God come to earth in the flesh. And he's not promising that this resurrection that he's talking about This I am the resurrection. It's something that's just going to happen later down the road. He's saying to Martha, I am these things right now. I'm actually God standing here before you. And then Jesus continues, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? He asks. Now, the pastor and professor Barbara Brown Taylor points out that the word for belief is the same word that we can also translate as the word trust. To claim that Jesus is fully God is a huge statement about belief, isn't it? And yet, changing the word to trust adds some depth to it for me. I can believe something because I've maybe just heard it. And yet, I tend to trust it when I've experienced something about it for myself. When it has the capacity to do something that's for real. So for example, I might believe that my sister loves me, right? You haven't met her, but we'll get to that another day. But I'm more likely to trust that she does if I've actually experienced her demonstrating something that looks like love to me, aren't I? Well, let me see if this makes any sense to you. Let's read again Jesus' words, but this time substitute in trust. Would you read them out loud with me? Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who trust in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and trusts in me will never die. Do you trust this? Martha replies to Jesus, Yes, Lord, I trust that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one who is coming into the world. Jesus isn't simply looking for Martha's belief in a claim that he's making. He's looking to see if she will trust him, that the love he has shown and the power he has demonstrated will communicate that he, in himself, holds the power of life and life over death. And if we trust this like Martha, then we too are asked to place our lives in God's hands, to trust that Jesus really is who he says that he is, which means, and here's the hard part, if Jesus is who he says he is, then we can't put our trust someplace else. And if you're like me, you often find a lot of ways to do that. Often we're tempted to reduce Jesus' teaching to simply being some great moral leader, because that way, all we have to do is follow his teachings. But to do that means that we trust ourselves to be able to measure up, don't we? We have to decide if we're really willing to trust that Jesus is God. If we believe that in him is the capacity to bring the full power of God into our lives, even when we've been let down, even when we're disappointed. Now, given what a powerful statement Jesus has made to Martha, you'd expect that when her sister Mary arrives, that Jesus would say something different to her, right? She would say, Lord, if you had been here, and Jesus might respond by at least trying to calm her fears. Or eliminate her tears. Maybe he would have said something like, hold on. I know you're grieving and disappointed, but I'm about to bring your brother back to life. Go ahead and dry your eyes. But this isn't what Jesus says. Instead of pushing back on Mary's fears, Jesus actually embraces them. He asks where Lazarus' body has been placed, and then he bursts into tears. This is where we get the shortest verse in the Bible. It's probably one you know, right? Jesus wept. Here we get to see Jesus' humanity. The same Jesus who is resurrection and life doesn't remove Mary's grief. He enters into it. He shares it. The story reveals that the full picture of who Jesus is, his divinity and his humanity, and why he came. It shows us why God chose to become human. And where we can find God in the midst of those times where we feel like we've been left alone, in our grief or in our loss, we can find God is actually with us, which suggests that God's power is revealed in pain, not apart from it, that the God who would weep with Mary is there with her in the pain, not waiting for the pain to pass before God will show up. Jesus meets these two sisters in their grief, right? And then he shows up in a powerful way. But the way he comes is not to prevent the heartache from happening. He does not leave at once to try to make sure Lazarus never dies in the first place. Rather, Jesus comes in such a way, not to make sure that our lives are easy and painless, but rather that the power of God might show up in the midst of our pain, despite it. Consider Lazarus again for just a moment. He does come back to life at Jesus' command, and yet it doesn't actually do him as many favors as you might think. Because after all, Lazarus is going to have to die again, right? Which means he's got to die twice, which doesn't seem like a great idea, at least not to me. For his sisters, it might mean they got to plan two funerals if they happen to outlive him. And yet, I think that what we often want is a life a little bit like Lazarus. We don't actually want to be resurrected. We want to be resuscitated. We want the thing that we're missing to come back just like it was before. Maybe it's a relationship, or it's a job. Maybe it's a house we used to have. Lord, if I could just have things the way they used to be. Have you ever prayed that prayer? Hoping that resuscitation is what God would do, rather than resurrection. Because in resurrection is the power for God to enter into a place that feels dead and to bring something wholly new out of the midst of it. It means that we have to let go, though, of the way that things used to be, so that we can embrace whatever new thing it is that God is trying to do in our midst. Now, Martha gave a beginning statement of faith when she said in verse 22, "But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Notice that portion that is underlined. Even now God will. Could it be that these are words that you need to hear? Especially when we feel like God has let us down. Even now, in that place, God will. God will do something. God will create. God will direct. God will provide. Even now, God will. Because God is with us and inviting us into the future. But there is something even deeper to understand about Jesus' humanity in this story. If we go to verse 38, it says, Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb of his friend Lazarus. Now, the words deeply moved here have long puzzled scholars. They seem almost out of place. Like, Jesus has already been weeping, so what's different here? Well, the actual translation is more than just like, Jesus was sad a second time when he actually got to the grave, or Jesus had great compassion. You see, here what's happening is more like anger and rage. Jesus is raging inside, but why? Anger seems kind of out of place at the grave of your friend, doesn't it? Which is why many translators just settle for deeply moved. It kind of cleans the whole thing up. Scholars give various explanations for Jesus' anger. I'll save you a few of them just for time. But here's what I will say. I think the most plausible is that Jesus' anger might be because Jesus is angry at death itself. He's angry at sickness and all that creates our heartache and grief. And while I can't prove exactly what's happening here, what is clear is that the word Jesus uses to describe his emotion here is fierce anger. I think Jesus still has this kind of fierce anger where he's more than deeply moved. I think it happens in the face of things like human trafficking, or in domestic violence, or in child exploitation. I can just imagine Jesus' rage as sometimes he looks out and sees what we have allowed to happen or even done to one another. But here, standing at Lazarus' tomb, he seems angry at all of these forces, the death and destruction, the things that separate us from God as God intended for our lives to be. What I can say is that Jesus brought Lazarus out of the grave, but when he did, he actually ended up sealing his own fate. For the religious council met after this happened, and they, fearful of Jesus' popularity, the text goes on to say, from that day on, planned to put Jesus to death. In other words, Jesus' power to give life, to stand in that hurt place, came at a cost. Lazarus comes out of the grave, and Jesus recognizes that in a short time, he himself will have to go into it. Perhaps it's all of this emotion that's raging inside of Jesus that causes his strong reaction. But let me offer one last observation about this strange word. A literal translation of the word is almost like snort. It's like the sound that a horse could make as it's getting ready to charge at an enemy. It makes this sort of snorting sound. Have you ever been so mad or angry that you found that you almost don't have words? It's just a sound that comes out. It's a sound that you make sometimes when you have to face something that you don't want to. Something that you resent, maybe something that makes you mad. But you know that you have to face it. It's like a war horse charging into battle. This is what Jesus is doing here. He lets out this angry expression because he knows as he looks at that tomb that he has to face this. And he's not looking for God to steer him out or make it like it never happened. Instead, Jesus looks at that tomb and knows that he has to charge right ahead, which gives maybe one final lesson for us, that God will get us through whatever it is that we're facing right ahead, because God himself has gone through. Jesus enters into the grief, the anger, the fear of whatever moment or disappointment we're in, not to try to prevent them from happening, but to face them head on. And because he is willing to face these hard things head on, he's willing to help us face them as well. Even when we wish we didn't have to. Because all of us wonder at times, don't we? God, why didn't you prevent fill in the blank from happening? And there are likely times we wish that God would just simply resuscitate whatever it was, bring it back to the way that it might have been before. But most of the time in life, we don't actually have that option, do we? Something's happened, and now we have to face it head on, trusting that God has faced it and will go with it through us. Now, I can remember a time in my life where this began to get real. It was probably the first time I had to face something where I felt like I was really let down by God. Maybe I was really more angry or disappointed. You see, I was a senior in high school, and I went on my first international trip. It happened to be to Haiti with a group from a Methodist church. And while we were in Haiti, we visited a children's hospital there. And I remember on the first day getting to go and stand in that children's hospital and hold a one-year-old boy named Bernard Baptiste. Bernard was gravely ill with tuberculosis. And I remember that when we came back later that week, Bernard had died. I, of course, was shocked. And then I can remember in my 18-year-old self thinking, God, what was the point of bringing this little child into the world, to have him die at such a young age from a disease that feels wholly preventable? I don't understand. Why would you do this? And the only answer I had is, I don't know. I wish I could tell you that there's some powerful story that emerges on the other side of what God did in Bernard's life. But it's been another 18 years since that day. And I don't know exactly how God might have worked through this little boy. In fact, for all I know, there are only a few people who remember him. God, his mother, me. I share this story even though it's unfinished, because most of the time it feels like that's our experience. We're not sure why, God, this happened. We can't always see, even in the horizon of the time we want, what God is doing in this situation. We don't know. But what we are asked to do is to trust that God is still at work no matter what. That God is capable, even in a tragic situation like this, of bringing forth some kind of new life. I trust that. I believe it. Every time I stand in this space and do a funeral, I think about how I believe that heaven is a reality that we'll get to experience. And I trust that someday I'll get to meet Bernard Baptiste again. He'll probably look different. He might be fully grown and mature, and we'll get to sit together and I'll get to ask him my questions about why and find out what else has happened in his life in the in-between. Which brings us back, I think, to our question. Martha's question. Even though God doesn't give us all the answers, or at least the answers as I want them, I do trust that God is with me, that God was Brenith Bernard, and that God gives me himself as an invitation to trust, that there is power not just in this life and the places I feel let down, but there's power that will allow for a life to come where those things that Jesus doesn't overcome in the moment we want him to ultimately are overcome. The question for us in the midst of our disappointment today is, do we trust this? Do we trust that God is both that kind of powerful and that kind of human to be with us in the places it feels most hard? That's my prayer. Amen and amen.